Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.
Thank you for joining us, and welcome to another edition of Answers Network. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and each week, this show will address many ways of creating greater health, joy, and love for you and your loved ones. And we will introduce you to top professionals and talented authors who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, I'd really appreciate it if you could all do me a big favor. Please forward at least one of our shows to your social media group and to someone you know who can benefit from today's subject. This is one powerful way that we can make a positive difference together. Now, I want you all to know that I am grateful that you take your time to listen to or watch this show, and especially those that send in questions, comments, reviews, and suggestions. Please remember, this show exists for you. Now, if you haven't gotten your free copy of the Attitude of Gratitude Journal yet, please go to our website at answers.network or answersforthefamily.com and download a copy. Give it 21 days and comment on whatever platform you listen to us on what focusing on gratitude has meant for you and your loved ones. Now, our topic today is a question that many people spend a lifetime looking for the answer to. Is this life all there is? Our guest's new book, When I Was Someone Else, The Incredible True Story of Past Life Connections, focuses on answers to that question and many more. Stefan Alex joins us. He is an investigative journalist and author of the best-selling book, The Test, which he interviewed six mediums without telling them that they were being tested. He sees if they can name the five objects he secretly placed in his father's coffin before it was buried. The results are astounding. Now, Stefan founded the Institute for Research on Extraordinary Experiences and the magazine In Explore. He also created and currently hosts a documentary series on French television channel M6. Stefan, welcome to Answers Network.
Thank you very much, Alan. I'm pleased to be with you.
Well, it is my pleasure to have you. The book has been a very interesting read. And what I'd like to do, because I see it as it's an incredible journey. And what I'd like to do is to have you go into a little bit more about while you're on this incredible journey that you refer to is as a spiritual retreat. Take us back and what led you to.
Well, it's a long story. I will try to make it short. But as you mentioned, I'm a journalist, and I am today 52, but I started this job when I was 19. I went to Afghanistan, who was occupied by the Soviet troop at the time. I wanted to become a journalist, war correspondent. So I started on the field because I was very bad at school. and basically for the 15 years that followed that first trip, I became a journalist. I became a war correspondent. I wrote books on topics like Taliban, like drug trafficking, very so-called normal and geopolitical issue. And then in 2001, I was driving a mission in Afghanistan again, and I was working with my brother and a huge team, and we had a car accident, and one of my brother died there. I was 32 at the time. He just passed 30. So his death changed a lot of things, as you can imagine.
Sure.
And it brought back in my mind the question, you know, we may have during our childhood, what do we do on Earth? What's the purpose of life? Is there a meaning of this life? But usually when we go into daily life, we just forget those questions because we have many things to do, to get a job, to make a living. Then suddenly at 32, this question came back to me, and suddenly it was just an emergency for me to answer that. What do we do here? I mean, if my brother can die like that, what's the purpose of life? So I am a journalist. I am not a spiritual seeker, or I am not a philosopher. So I only had my tool as a journalist to investigate this topic. So I started to do it. I started to went to see researchers, physicists, neuroscientists to ask them, what do we know about brain, about the relationship between consciousness and brain, because it seems to be obvious that there is a connection. Mm-hmm. And suddenly I realized that what we believe, it's a certainty. Brain is functioning, then it's create consciousness. And if brain is not functioning, there is no consciousness and that is nothing. This is just a belief. It's not a scientific proof. It's not scientifically proven. So step by step, it opened a lot of questions that I thought to be not worth to investigate. So step by step, I start to investigate all those spiritual topics. And it drives me to, you know, when we work about on death, it's also make you more interested in what you're doing in your life. So for me, year after year, I keep on working on this spiritual topic, and it became very important for me to try to be kind of coherent with myself. I try to wake up every morning saying to myself, okay, if I'm dying tonight, is it okay with me? Do I have, did I do the right thing, the thing I wanted to do? And sometimes, you know, life takes us to some direction we don't choose because, we have to deal with the reality. So as you mentioned, it's a long answer for your question. Sorry mm-hmm. about that. But okay. For me, at the retreat in Peru, I discovered shamanism something like 15 years ago. And to be in Peru, to be in a retreat, in a shamanic retreat center, it's something I try to do every 2 or 3 years just to make a kind of life review, because it helps me to step back from the daily life, to observe my life, to observe where I am, to observe where the choice I did drove me, and maybe to correct the way and to correct the way I'm dealing with my life. So I was there in Peru for that, to, you know, you stop email, you stop phone call, you stop all your social obligation, and you're just alone with yourself. It starts to be boring soon, but mm-hmm. in this boring moment, then you meet yourself and you have an opportunity to kind of interact with yourself and you with your deep self in a way that usually daily life doesn't allow. I'm sorry, I don't know if my English is very clear, I hope so.
No, actually, your English is great. And one of the thoughts that was coming to mind while you were saying that was that did the shamans help bring you to a place of release or a place of clarity that you hadn't experienced before that allowed you to go on this other part of your journey?
You know, it's not really the shaman itself, because the shaman are not spiritual leader. Shaman yeah. are not just a kind of technician who helps you to meet the spirit world.
Right.
And it's the spirit world who interacts with you. I mean, if you right. have to believe in it, of course. But the shaman is just here to create a safe space for you to travel in this other realm. Mm-hmm. I never thought it was an obligation to decide if it's the spiritual is real. You don't have to answer this question, because this question can be difficult for some people like me as a journalist to answer, because as a journalist, I want solid proof. I want right. evidence that the spiritual exists. So sometimes I may have things that look like evidence, but sometimes I may also have a lot of doubt. So I decided to leave. You know, like when you enter a movie theater, you know what you are going to see is a fiction, but right. you just leave your disbelief outside and you enter the theater like that. So for me, shamanism is the same space. I enter there. I don't mind if it's real or not. I just try to navigate and to see what will happen and how it's mm-hmm. resonate with myself.
Okay, so. How did the experience in the Amazon after you were getting, share a little bit about how you learned about Alexander.
Yeah, this is when I fly there, it was a couple of years ago. I was in a quite tense moment of my life, because I just turned to 47. And I had, as you said, a big TV show, many, many activity in France. So I really wanted to have a break. So I remember in my journal, when I took the plane, I wrote in my journal, I want to go there to find myself, to find who I am. So after something like a week, I was so relieved to be in the forest, to be calmed down, to be in this environment. Mm-hmm. So I was spending my day doing physical training like Tai Chi and meditation and nothing except walking around and things like that. So one morning, it was something like 7 days after my arrival, I decided to do a little shamanic journey but with the drumming, not with the substance. So I had a ear set. I put it on my ear. I lie down on my couch and I just play the drumming. So I hear doom, 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 doom. And it helps the cerebral wave to dissociate, to increase the trip you are doing. So I just lie down, close my eyes, and I let my imagination go. So I let my imagination make me, for instance, at this moment, I just imagine myself as a bird, and I was flying above the place I was staying in the forest. And I knew it was my imagination, of course, but the imagination is the first step to the other realm, as right. the shaman says. Sure. So I let my imagination work and I saw this landscape. And suddenly I saw something that I didn't think I imagined myself. I don't know, but something surprised me. I saw a little dot on the ground. And this little dot, I thought it was maybe human being, maybe Indian from the past time. So I fly down, and as I was flying down, the landscape changed and became totally white instead of the green of the forest. And it was not anymore a forest. It was a kind of dusty or snowy landscape.
Yeah.
And there were the dot was people. There were soldiers from German army, and they were just fighting behind some tank that was advancing toward the village. And one of these men suddenly was just in front of me, like 1 or 2 meters in front of me, and he was staring at me. And I instantly knew his name was Alexander. I instantly knew his rank in the military was Obersturmführer. But I was conscious. I was not sleeping. I was not dreaming. It was at the time, I really thought it was my imagination who was bringing me this material. So I let it go. I let it create it. And I saw the scene of this man staring at me, and suddenly I saw a shrapnel eating his neck and killing him. I saw blood coming out of his neck. He fell down. I was looking at this. I was impressed because it was very emotional. It was a very emotional vision. And I was thinking, wow, my imagination is working well. It's quite amazing. And so the scene repeats itself. He was standing, staring at me. He was hit by the shrapnel, falling down. Maybe it happens 3 or 4 times. And he was, when he was alive, he was staring at me, and he was looking at me in a very kind of provocative way, like if he wanted me to understand something, or I don't know. So I thought, okay, his name is Alexander, he's Oberschenführer. Maybe could I have his name, his surname? And suddenly I saw the vision of an identity card with the name Hermann wrote on it. Mm-hmm. So I understood, okay, it might be Alexander Hermann, Obersturmführer. And I saw some other vision. I saw a little girl. I saw him in a civilian clothes with another man. I didn't understand what I was seeing precisely. And there was some couple of other detail. So then the vision lasts for 30 minutes. And then the drumming stopped. And I stand up, I take off the headset, and I was impressed. I was impressed because it was very emotional, but not even 1 minute I thought it could be real. I mean, for me, it was some unconscious material coming up just for me to understand something. Like when you are having a psychoanalyst, the psychoanalyst may be interested in your dream or in your in fantasy. Right. So I thought it's such a material that could maybe teach something about my fascination to war. I wanted to become war correspondent very young. Mm-hmm. So I think it was related to something like that. So I just write it down in my journal very precisely. And I just leave it like that. And when I came back in France, a couple of weeks after, I was curious, of course, I'm a journalist, so I Googled the name. I Googled Alexander Hermann Obersturmführer, and maybe the listener can do it. And very soon I find some listing which seems to be the list of German officer during World War II. And I find one name, one Alexander Hermann Obersturmführer. And really, Alan, believe me, for me it was a coincidence at the time, because I am very rational. I'm open to the unknown, but basically I'm still a journalist. So in between two options, I will always choose the more rational one. And the more rational one is that it's my imagination and it's really a bizarre coincidence, but it's still a coincidence. To the point that I really left that for 1 year. For 1 year, I just leave it like that and I keep on doing my job, my many activities here in France. And for a reason I don't know, 1 year after, I decided to start again my research. So I start again, Google Alexander Hermann Obersturmführer, and I find the same document that I found at first. And I came across the name of a French historian. So I don't know why I decided to find his phone number. I don't know why I decided to call him, but I did. And for by chance, this guy knew me because I am a TV presenter. So he knows me from my TV show. So he knew I was a serious guy and I was not a bizarre story when I tell him my vision in Peru. Mm-hmm. And his first reaction was good. I mean, he's a historian. So he said, this Alexander Hermann was Obersturmführer, which is kind of lieutenant in the regular army. So maybe there is a military file for him, because the German kept a lot of file for any person. So he advised me to do research on the archive, military archive, which I did. And he gave me the name of a French historian who was working in the archive. And I wrote him, and I discovered that there was a military file from this Alexander Hermann. And I received it after a couple of days. And this is really the moment where the bizarre story starts. Because when I received this file, I don't speak German myself. So it started to be quite difficult for me to understand all these different documents. There was 78 pages of military document, which I don't understand. But I start with difficulty to Google some sentence. And I spent the entire day to do that without going very much further. And the historian, to whom I have sent also the file, wrote me an email late that night and told me, I translate the major information from the file. So this guy was born in this city, he went in this division and blah, blah, blah. And at the end, there is this death certificate. So he died October 20th, 1941, in this little village in Russia from a shrapnel on the neck.
Wow.
So when I wrote that on my email, really it was like I was hit by something so heavy. And suddenly, at that very second, for me, it was impossible to still believe it was a coincidence.
Sure.
I didn't know what it was, but I was sure I should and I must start an investigation on this.
Now, how did that affect you emotionally? You know, in other words, emotionally, how did that affect you? Because that's huge.
It was complicated. It was complicated because from that moment, I understood that I had a link with this man. I mean, this kind of vision, this kind of appearance cannot happen without any reason like that. I mean, I was still believing I make it with my mind. But when I discovered that he died the way I saw, this real Alexander Hermann Obersturmführer died the way I saw it, for me, it was impossible to just dismiss it and to say, okay, it's not interesting. And it was very uncomfortable because this Alexander Hermann was not a Tibetan monk or a Mahatma Gandhi or a good guy like that. He was an SS official. Mm-hmm. He was a man who did so bad choice in a so terrible part of the moment of our history in Europe. Mm-hmm. It's the total opposite of who I am. I mean, I am a good person. I want to believe that. As a journalist, I try to make people understand each other. It's basically my job. I try to understand complicated situation abroad and to explain it to my reader here in France. So I'm really the opposite of those guys who just wanted to kill everyone who was different, who were racist, who were violent, who were... So it was very, very uncomfortable. And
Well, I say one of the reasons why I asked about how it affected you emotionally was just that particular reason is that this is somebody doing horrific things. And it's interesting because so many people that I've talked to in the past that have talked about them having a past life, I've always thought it was interesting that nobody had a past life where they were, you know, they were the guy that shoveled, horse manure. You know, they weren't the guy that slopped the pigs. Their past life was always, oh, well, I was this princess or I was this prince or I was everybody's, you know, when they talk about it, they have these great stories. And when I read yours and I thought emotionally, how would that make me feel if I thought, what do you mean? Was I somebody that horrible? So emotionally, I felt it when I was reading it. I felt it like thinking, how did you feel this? Because nobody else has ever told me a story where they believe that they were a particular person in a past life and that person was horrible.
But it was, as I told you, it was very uncomfortable and I was feeling very uncomfortable about that. But on the meantime, I had the intuition that I had put the finger on something very important because it resonated with me. I am, as I told you, when I was 18, 17, I wanted to become war correspondent. I wanted to go on war, not to do war, but to see war. I mean, why?
To tell the story, right?
This is the reason I find afterward. But yeah. On the first place, I just wanted to see war. I just wanted to be there. And I have two brothers, and none of them wanted to do that. I mean... I am the only one in the family who want to do that. So it's not even related to our education. And I escaped to Afghanistan when I was 19. Even my parents didn't know that. I told them I went to Pakistan. They didn't know I crossed the border to join the Mujahideen secretly. So I had this fascination. And to go a little bit further, this fascination was in me a fascination of the evil. I wanted to understand how people can do bad things. Mm-hmm. For me, it was not possible to understand that. I mean, I'm good, I think. I wanted to interview killer. I wanted to interview butcher. I wanted to interview people who do really bad things on the battlefield. Right. And this became really an obsession. I mean, I work on a difficult area. I'm one of the specialists of the Taliban movement. I spent years going to Afghanistan as a journalist to interview Taliban. I'm one of the rare journalists who meet Mullah Omar, to say the least. So why? I mean, where it come from, this fascination, this more than an interest in this. And also, I feel that I have a shadow inside of me. I don't know if it's the proper word in English. You know, it's the Jungian term of your shadow that you are having inside of you. The energy that sometimes it was putting me in a very melancholic mood. I was not happy in some part of my life. When I was a journalist some years, I just wanted to go on the battlefield. And if I was killed there, no problem, I don't care. So where did this come from? Very balanced guy. I mean, I am a good guy, but not very psychologically balanced. So when I find this Alexander, when I find his background, I thought, okay, maybe I'm holding something from him. Not his belief system, not his thought, but maybe some emotion of him, some nightmare, some energy that have not been cured by death or whatever. I don't know. But I it was very uncomfortable, but on the meantime, it was for me the great opportunity of my life, maybe to shine light on this shadow inside of me.
Wow. So how did this change you from the standpoint of before you gathered all of this information and learned all of this, how did this change you on your belief of the phenomenon of past lives?
I decided during my research, and it's all detailed in the book, I decided not to go into the intellectual knowledge about reincarnation. I know the research, I know the people who have worked on this. I even published book of Jim Turker in France, who had the Division of Perceptual Studies in Charlottesville, Virginia. I know the work of Jan Stevenson on reincarnation, but I didn't want it to go into that. I wanted to keep on, what I'm feeling, what I'm experiencing during this. I don't know if it's a past life or not. I don't want to fix the story saying this is my past life. I just want to leave the question, to leave the certainty of this aside and to investigate, to go in Germany, to try to find if there is family of this guy still alive, to go in Russia. From the very beginning of my investigation, I knew I wanted to be on the day of his death, October 20, in Russia, in the place he died. So I managed and I organized myself to be there at that moment. So my real task, and it's what I'm writing in the entire book, is to try to understand the link I have with this guy. If it's a past life, how it is to deal with that in my daily life today, how I can have proof of it or some evidence. And as you say, how it changed me. I remember one day, which was very, very important, because that day, it was the beginning of the healing process for me. I was visiting many places in Germany, and I knew Alexander. I've been stationed in Dachau concentration camp, north of Munich in Germany. It was one of the first concentration camps where a lot of Jew, but also priest and communist prisoner was held. And the SS were guarding the camp. And I knew that Alexander had been there for a couple of months. So I wanted to visit the place. And it was the first time I visited such a camp in my life. I never visited any. So I was very concerned about the idea of being there because it's not a touristic place. So I drove there and I parked my car in the parking and I start walking toward the entrance of the camp. And I was feeling more and more bad. I don't know what I was feeling, but I was feeling very uncomfortable. And there was a lot of tourists around me. Some were laughing, family. And I was advancing, walking toward the entrance. And suddenly there was this gate. Everybody have seen this metallic gate with
the pictures, yes.
Yes. And I passed the gate. So, and then I enter a huge space with big trees and some house. It was the concentration camp itself. And suddenly I just fall down. I was not able to stand anymore. I start crying and I start insulting Alexander. I understood how stupid he was, how weak he was, how full of shame he was to have been involved in such a regime, in such a military. And I really say a lot of bad words to him, but I understood afterward that at this very moment, he went out of me. The part of Alexander I had inherited, or maybe the part of Alexander, if he was my past life or whatever you can say, this part went out of me and suddenly it was in front of me. This melancholia, this pessimism I was hiding all my life, it was not belonging to me. It was from him. So it was a really, really the beginning of a dissociation process. And I understood that, okay, it could be my past life, whatever. I don't care about the term, the official term. The thing is that I'm holding him since all my life. And suddenly I can realize who I am compared to who he is. And I can dissociate the two. And some of my feeling, some of the thing I'm just carrying all my life, suddenly I can just get free of it. And it takes months and months and months and many other trips to Germany and also to Russia to really end this healing process. But, you know, and the reason why I decided to write that story, it was really not obvious at the beginning because I'm a writer, but this was so personal and so intense that maybe I should just keep that for me. But I decided to write it because at one moment I realized that this is what it was, not only my own story. It's the story of everyone. You know, we like to believe that we are a good person, and if we would have been born in Germany in 1930, we would have made a good choice. Are we sure of this? Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. And I read an American writer, name of Karl Malantis. I don't know if you heard of him.
No.
He is a professor of philosophy at Yale, but he was also a Marine during the Vietnam War. And he went twice in Vietnam, and he wrote about war, and he wrote about what he did in war. But he has also the background of a philosopher to observe what he did. And his book is just an amazing book. And in his book, he said that if you believe you are a good, and if you believe you won't do bad things in a bad situation, maybe you lie to yourself, and this is very dangerous. Mm-hmm. I believe we all have a shadow part. We have a good part, we have a light part, and we have a shadow part. To ignore your shadow part is a dangerous process, because sometimes life puts you in a situation where you cannot control yourself and everything explodes. And I think it's what happened in Germany in the 30s. Millions of young German, and most of them were not racist, millions of young German became monster, because suddenly they had the opportunity to just let the shadow explode. And I wanted to understand that and to write about that, because you know, history always bring back the same story if you don't understand. And I think toward history, we can find again the same story, the same difficulty for us, the same challenge. Of course, today, fortunately, Hitler could not come back to power because the political situation in the world is not the same, fortunately. But we may have some other situation that look alike. And sometimes, you know, politicians, they put some oil on the fire instead of doing what they should do, bring light and peace and explanation. So I think this story and what I wanted to write through my story, through my personal investigation, was an investigation between our own shadow. What do we do when we are facing our shadow? What choice are we making? Why are we making those choices? What is behind us driving our body, I should say? And so it's also a deep psychological book and psycho-spiritual investigation.
Well, and you've expressed that so beautifully, and in the book as well as right now. And it's one of the things that I thought is that this is so powerful because of the things that you just said, is that we need to shine a light on these things. We need to understand that things have happened, and trying to whitewash or make the past just go away can unfortunately cause us to repeat it. So I think that's another reason why it's important that you've written this book, and I really appreciate it. So for everybody out there, we are talking with Stefan Alex, and we're going to take a break, but the book is called When I Was Someone Else, The Incredible True Story of Past Life Connection. Stay with us. We'll be right back. You're watching or listening to Answers Network.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service, licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services and Westshield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. We are speaking with Stefan Alex, and we are talking about past lives. We're talking about the paranormal. We're talking about things that have happened in history. There's so much psychologically in his book. But one of my questions that I have for you, Stefan, is that you mentioned in the book that you felt like someone or something was helping you in your research. I found that very interesting. What do you think that was? Because one of my thoughts was that part of this journey was because you were chosen for this journey, because you are a journalist, because you are a writer. When you mentioned that someone was helping you through this, that maybe this was something we all needed to be reminded of. Share a little bit about your thoughts on that.
I think we are not alone. We believe we are alone. We are a kind of meat and bones, and there is nothing coming out of ourselves. But I think the boundary of our body is a kind of illusion. But basically, as I told you, I'm a journalist. So I for a long, long time, I didn't want to believe in my intuition, because my intuition could be interesting, but I wanted to prove it and I wanted to have evidence. You don't relate with intuition when you are working about drug trafficking in Central Asia. You need to work on fact and investigation. So for a long part of my life, intuition was something that was keeping aside of my daily life. But during this journey, during this investigation, the topic was so overwhelming that sometimes I was kind of totally stuck in my investigation. Didn't know where to go, didn't know what to do. When I was in Germany, I didn't speak German. I was lost. And suddenly all my defense went down. I don't know if it's a proper term in English.
Yeah.
And I remember, for instance, one day I find the address where Alexander have spent part of his childhood with his parents. And I was in front of that building in Plauen, east of Germany. And I was looking at the building. Okay, I cross the street. I go a little bit forward and I look at the building again. And I spend something like 15 minutes in front of the building. And I don't know what to do. So mm-hmm. I have the building, but there is no one there. I cannot go inside. So what to do? So after 15 minutes, I say, okay, I go down to my hotel. And so I start walking down the street. And at the first block, I should have gone straight to go back to my hotel. But for some reason, I was kind of, my body was kind of, I didn't have any will. I was just... without any will, without any intention. And suddenly my body turned right and I start walking to the right. And after the end of the street, again, I turn right. So I turn around the block. My rational mind didn't tell me to do things. My rational mind didn't have anything to do. So he stopped arguing, he stopped deciding anything. And I leave someone else to decide. And suddenly I came across an entrance of a building and I went inside. And Then I arrived in a little place who was basically behind the building where Alexander has spent his childhood. And I stood there for something like 10, 15 minutes. I was looking around, taking some pictures. And I finally went out and basically I will make it short. All the details are in the book, but basically the day after, I realized that something had driven me to the real apartment he was, because the first place, it was an apartment when he started to be occupied when Alexander was something like 10, but before that it was another place, and something brought me in front of this other place. So this is one experience, but I had many other experiences like that during this trip. And I start to pay more attention to this because I was able to cross-check the information I was getting. Another information, when I was in Russia, I wanted to find his grave. Probably it's what you were referring to. I knew he was buried in a village. I knew his body was there. I mean, I didn't have any proof because officially his body was removed from the village and taken to a mass grave 50 miles away. But I was feeling his body was still there. I had the feeling very strong that his body was under a house. I didn't know at the time, but I was had feeling he was there. So when I drove inside the village, I knew he was somewhere at one of the exits of the village. There were three exits in the village. So I arrived from the north exit. I was looking around, trying to see what I was feeling, nothing. Then I went into the west exit, and suddenly, as I was just passing the last house of the village, I received a kind of hit on my chest. It was not physical, but it was nearly like physical. So it was so unexpected that I decided to stop the car and to walk around. And there was nothing around me, just the last house. But I didn't know what to do with that. I mean, I'm not a psychic or of some sort. I'm just a journalist lost in this feeling. So to make a long story short, I realized that after some days that his body was still today buried under the house at this exit of the village. And I had the official confirmation from this from people who helped me in Germany. So all this journey, all this investigation, and it's what I'm sharing in the book, teach me that basically when you ask the universe or whoever in the universe for help, they answer and they help you. I don't know who it is. I don't know what it is. I don't want to speak about guardian angel or whatever. I mean, this is a spiritual term. The fact is that we are not alone, and people helped us all our life, even though in the baddest thing. To have people who help you, it's not a meaning that the bad things will be avoided. Because sometimes bad things could be also an important step on your journey. Sure. It's maybe difficult to hear that when you are going through a very bad situation in life, but today I've lost many people and I saw death, and I understood that sometimes the bad things that happen in your life could be also the beginning of a really big spiritual change.
Well, we've only got about four more minutes, which time has flown by, and I'd love to spend more time. But we have a couple of questions that have come in, and I would love to get these out. This first one says, in my late 20s, I traveled to Switzerland to photograph buildings for a private U.S. real estate group. One afternoon, I went walking around a neighborhood where two of the properties were located. I found myself in autopilot. And see, to me, this sounds like what happened to you when you went around the block. It says that it's seemingly they felt drawn down one street, across another, up to the next, until I found myself in front of a very simple, nondescript residence. I stood there and I just stared at it. And I wanted I had this urge. I wanted to run up the stairs and walk in. My heart started pounding, and I had a vision of running and playing with other children. It says, I haven't thought about this experience for years until I read the review of your book on the Answers Network site. Do you believe that people have these flashes for a reason? And is there important information that we can learn from deeper investigation? And this is Brian in Ohio. And then, like I said, unfortunately, we just have a couple of minutes.
Yeah, Brian, I'm sure. It's worth to investigate, of course. I mean, if something from deep inside of you, it has a message for you. You have to understand something. You have to work on it. I mean, it's... And what I learned from the research on the past life memory with children, for instance, is that usually children have memory of past life when the deaths of the previous life were violent. It seems that a violent death leave more memory to a child than a normal death. It's what the research tells us. Mm-hmm. For me, let's leave the research aside. What's interesting is that, okay, how we can work on ourselves to understand more who we are and to decrease the confusion of our mind. Every opportunity is worth to investigate.
Mm-hmm. And the other question reads, I have read a dozen or more books on past lives, but my question is more quantum than nature. If we are all connected and our thoughts are energy waves, perhaps like radio broadcasts, these waves are circulating in the world around us. Could we see flashes of other lives and because of our belief system mistake them as past lives? And that's from Gwen in Florida.
Well, you know, I think, Gwen, this question is a key question because I think we are talking together from our individual point of view. You, Alan, me, Stefan. Mm-hmm. And we believe we are this individuality, but I think this individuality is a kind of illusion. And I came across a book from Larry Doocy, this American physicist. I really recommend this book. The title is One. And this book is just amazing because it explains how what your readers say. Okay. So basically, I think, we should maybe take a little bit a step forward from the idea of being just one individuality. We really are not the person we see in the mirror of the morning. This is just a costume. This is just a suit we are holding for a couple of decennies. So maybe we are all past life or other life, each other. It's a difficult question, so I won't have maybe time enough to go into that. But it's a key question.
Okay, so a question like that, if you were to answer it, say, on your website or whatever, so where is the best place that people can, where the book is available, in what languages is the book available, and if they want to contact you or have questions like this, what's the best way for them to do that?
I have an official Facebook page called Stefan Alex Official, but the best answer from what I could say it's my book because I wrote a lot to try to describe what I was going through. So this book, When I Was Someone Else, that you can find on Amazon.com or anywhere, is the real day by day factual investigation of. My journey. When something like that happened, when you have a memory that arose, what do you do with it? It's what I try to explain in the book.
Sure. And the book, if I'm not mistaken, is available in both French and English. Is that correct?
And Polish also.
And Polish. Okay.
Yeah.
That's great. So a quick question is, if someone listening feels like they're communicating with people from the past or just want to hone or learn more about these skills, how would you suggest they go about that?
I wrote my other book, who is published in English, is called The Test.
Yes.
You mentioned it nicely at the beginning of our show. It's a book about mediumship. And in the book, basically, I test six mediums about the object I was hiding in the casket of my father. Mm-hmm. But they're also sharing a lot of information about their feeling, how they work, how they decided to be medium, how it came to them when they were children. They give me so many information about them, themselves, and how it works to be a medium, that it's a very, very fascinating book. And I'm telling very easily because it's like them who wrote it.
Right. All right. Well, first, Stefan, I really want to just thank you for not only taking the time to write the book, but for coming on the show. And for everybody out there, it's Stefan Alex. If you go to the answers.network website, you'll be able to see how it's spelt. That may make it easier because it's Stephanalix. So that's for us here in America, that's a little different as far as the spelling goes.
Sorry for that.
but again, the book is When I Was Someone Else, The Incredible True Story of Past Life Connection. So again, Stefan, thank you so much. Really appreciate you coming on, and I really appreciate you sharing this really very emotional journey.
It was a great pleasure for me to be with you, Alan. Thank you very much. Thank
You're
you to our welcome. Listener.
All right. And for everybody out there, please join us next Monday when we are joined by Hope O. Baker to discuss her new book, Finding Hope. It's a birth mother's journey into the light. In this special interview, Hope will share how, after placing her newborn son up for adoption in 2013, she overcame her depression, addiction, and the stigma that surrounded so many birth mothers that have gone through this type of thing. And please, for everybody out there, please visit our past interviews at answers.network, or better yet, just subscribe to the show through iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, YouTube if you want to see us, or Facebook Live through the LA Talk Radio site. You can go on Spreaker, SoundCloud, or whatever podcast platform you listen to. And if they don't have our show, let them know, or let us know, and we will see about adding our show to their platform. If you like what you hear, please leave a review. It will help us spread the positive and informative wave towards change. So for everybody out there, be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers Network.
You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.